So I'll be talking today about modern version control systems for Debian packaging, and I'll explain what that means in just a second. You all know, unless you've been hiding under a rock somewhere, that distributed version control systems are hip these days. Should get out more. And I'll be talking a little bit about why that is, what the features are that make distributed version control so powerful and so likable. And I'll also talk about how I use it, how we could use it for Debian packages, and even a little further. Short disclaimer, I'm a Git person, but I don't see any noteworthy differences between Git and Mercurial and BZR and so on and so forth. So for the purpose of this talk, modern VCS is Git for me, but anything basically for you. So this is not about religion, this is just about the concepts. So let's have a quick look at what happened in the domain of version control in the last couple of years, and until like 2003 or 2004, there was really nothing else in CVS and Subversion. You can see them aligned on the left side here. Subversion at one point in time got a little update, SVK, which allowed you to do offline use, but did that in a rather hackish way, and it also didn't take care of some of the shortcomings of Subversion. And then suddenly, I just noticed that I didn't even list GNU Arch on here, but maybe that's good. So at one point in time, Tom Lord, who is the author of GNU Arch, came up with a radically different system, and I think it was Tom Lord who was the first to write a distributed version control system. I realized that Perforce and BitKeeper and ClearCase, I think, as well, have that ability, and I'm not sure whether they were before GNU Arch, but anyway, I'll just leave that there. Fact is that since GNU Arch, we've seen a number of new tools in the domain of distributed or modern version control. Darks being one that I listed somewhat specifically. It's the only one that actually is based on mathematical models of version control. The others are based on what developers actually do with version control. So a slightly different approach, but as you can see down here, I have a couple of scales. These are not supposed to be scales. I'm not trying to say that like BK or Git are more distributed and more atomic than darks. It's just that I somehow had to line up these dichotomies here. And that's what I've been trying to do. So BitKeeper, Git, Mercurial, BZR, they are all down here. And Monotone is a little bit of its own. It has some very different approaches to branching and merging, so I listed it separately. But basically, you can see that the trend nowadays is towards the right side here. A lot of people still use Subversion. It is a very simple model. But if you take a step further, if you actually bother to learn what version control really is, that it's not just file system storage done differently, which is, in a way, what Subversion tries to do, that it's more like a tool that you can actually use to work by yourself completely autonomously, but also makes it easier for you to exchange information and patches with your peers, then you'll probably find yourself using a tool that is most likely in this square, so Git and BZR and Mercurial. This graph actually raised some controversial issues. People, not only of the kind, like, why is my system not listed, but more like, what do you actually mean with these scales? So if you want to look at these slides later on, they will be available. There's a link down here to a mailing list post where a couple of people try to make sense of it. And I also put in the original quotations from a discussion that led up to the creation of this graph. So. But anyway, let's go back in time a little bit and look at CVS-like version control systems and what they are. This includes Subversion. Conceptually, CVS and Subversion are, come on, there we go, snapshot-based. A revision corresponds to the state of a tree at a given time. I apologize for that greater sign. With that, what I mean is that basically you have a head tree, and it's always the same. Whoever has checked out the Subversion trunk or the current CVS head revision has exactly the same tree. It is basically a direct clone and synchronized clone with the centralized server. It can actually be represented change set centric. This is a big difference between CVS and SVN, because CVS used to be a file-based system. Every single file itself got checked in, and if one file conflicted with what is currently on the server, then all your other files that were part of the same commit made it to the server except for the conflicting file, so you kind of got out of sync. Now, Subversion introduced atomic commits and made it possible to think in terms of change sets, which are basically a number of changes to different files compiled into one atomic unit, or a patch, if you want to call it that. Merging in these systems consists of taking two different trees and computing the diff and then applying that diff to the current work tree that you're working with. And most of the time, the algorithm that is being used is simple diff and patch, as we know from the GNU core utils. And they are okay. They're doing a pretty good job, but they are not necessarily very smart about things. Now, I'll get to that later when we talk about the other systems, which try to be a little bit smarter. Another thing here is that the only thing you can basically attach with CVS and Subversion systems to one of those change sets or snapshots is a single log message. So there's no other metadata stored except for the author and the date. But that's pretty much it. So graphically, and I couldn't be bothered to remake this, so this is the German version. A little bit of intercultural exchange here. Entwickler is developer, Versionskontrolle is version control. You could have figured that out yourself. So there's a central instance here, a server, CVS or a Subversion server, and a couple of developers that are basically synchronizing with that server. Exchange between different developers is not possible, other than conceptually on a mail basis, you know, like change that line and then you'll have approximately the same as I have, or sending patches in email that then have to be applied and then have to be committed. It's not at all integrated in the version control system. So these modern version control systems, they kind of address most of these issues. First of all, they get rid of the snapshot-based approach. These modern version control systems are commit-based. What that means is that the commit itself is a unit completely independent from the snapshot of the tree. Whatever tree a developer has checked out is identified only by the set of commits that have been applied or integrated into that tree. So it is quite possible for two people to be working on the same software and have completely different trees. That sounds confusing. That sounds like there's a source of problem. But the version control system actually manages the differences. The way it does it, and I tried to highlight that a little bit with bold because it's an important feature, but didn't really come across that well. Every single commit with these version control systems is identified by a unique hash. Now, we all know hashes are one-way functions, and the way that the hash is computed is pretty much, I'll say, dependent on the version control system, but the idea is the same. You cannot possibly produce two commits that have the same hash, even if they do the same changes, because like date information and author information are also going in there. So we'll just call it unique hashes for now. Now, if you want to merge two trees with these version control systems, then what you do is you compute set difference between the applied commits between the two trees, and then try to apply the reduced set to your current working tree. If there are any questions about this or about distributed version control systems in general, conceptual questions, please raise your hand. I'd like to get them out of the way before I go on, because otherwise it may be a little confusing what I'm talking about later. And I realize that the subject is new. Not everybody has had the time to really work with these things. There's a question here. What is a trunk? The question was, is there a trunk? SVN has the trunk, which is sort of the mainline mainline development tree. There isn't per se a trunk in modern version control systems, but there is a master branch. In general, I think yes would be the answer. You can make it the trunk. When I talked about this issue a couple times, I started to realize that trunk in SVN is really just a convention. It's nothing special. It's just another branch. So you don't have to have a trunk in your Subversion repository at all. You can name it mainline or foo or whatever you want. But you can pretty much do the same thing also with these distributed version control systems. Like, for instance, with Git, if you clone a repository, it will only clone the master branch by default. So that's your trunk in some ways. I hope that answers the question. Yes? That's great information. Eric Raymond is working on the history of version control, specifically in open source. It's Eric Raymond, after all. And he tries to, according to what you just said, he tries to identify the influences from the commercial players, like BitKeeper, for instance. So that should be out later this year. Thanks for the information. So these are the points that I've listed so far are talking about merging. I hope that it makes sense what I said, that commits are entities and that you basically compute sets and then apply them to graphs. So this is a lot about graph theory. We'll have a couple of graphs later as well. There's another important feature about modern control systems, version control systems, and this is that every clone is a completely autonomous system. So what happened with Subversion and CVS previously is you would check out your software, and then you would have a 4-hour train ride, and you'd do all these cool things. And then at the end of the day, you'd have a single commit for all of your stuff because you couldn't commit while you were offline, assuming you don't have an internet connection in the train. You couldn't actually go and fix a typo in a man page and create a commit that said fixed typo in man page and have it be treated completely independently from your refactoring of the core of the software that you were just writing. SVK tried to address that. So with SVK, you could actually create commits individually and later push them to the centralized SVK repository. And that's a hack. I hope I got that across clearly. With these modern version control systems, you no longer need that at all, because when you clone, you have a full repository, and you can commit to that repository as much as you want. That repository will diverge from all the other repositories that your co-developers are using, but we know that they don't actually diverge, because all you're doing is changing the set or extending the set of commits that have been applied. These commits are your own commits. They are not available yet to your co-developers. They are only stored in your local repository. So in order to make them available, you can either put your repository online and let them pull your individual commits or cherry pick them, or you can push those commits to a central server. And that's also another point here. Distributed version control systems don't have to be used in a completely distributed fashion. You can use them in a centralized way with a central repository, no problem. So that's an important point, especially for Debian, to which I'll get later on. So this is what it looks like, again, with the intercultural version. I guess the graph kind of speaks for itself, but what you see here is a lot of arrows between the different developers, and no centralized version anymore, and these little black squares are supposed to be commits, and you can take cherry pick only this one commit from another person and integrate it in your own, and rely on the version control system to keep track of which commits have been applied and which haven't. It works remarkably well. Can I, at this point in time, maybe just ask the audience quickly, raise your hand if you've used or you're currently using distributed version control systems. Good stuff. That's the majority. More than half. Sorry? What? Oh, have you written a distributed version control system? Holy cow. Why? No, I understand. There's something to be said about reinventing wheels, right? So or just doing it better. So what are some of the problems that occur when you try to merge? And this is basically taken from an example from Subversion. I used to be a Plone developer, and Plone may have been one of the more complex projects entirely managed in Subversion. And one thing that drove everyone wild when we released a new version was merge tracking. The fact that it was your job as the developer to track which branches have been merged when. And the way you did that was with log messages attached to your snapshots. And those log messages then, in order to be processed by tools, no, they weren't XML, but they were standardized. So you had to write exactly what you were doing in a standardized format. And as we all know, humans like to do mistakes. It didn't work. So situations that we got into were here in this graph, what you see is U is sort of supposed to be upstream, or like your trunk or mainline branch. And then you branch two feature branches, F1 and F2 of it. And at one point in time, after you created F1, you find out that it is actually in a pretty good state. You want to integrate F1 into F2 so that you have a synergetic effect between the two. So you merge F1 into F2, that's right here, and then at one point in time you decide your feature is actually stable, you migrate it into the trunk, and you merge into here. Now, at this point in time, you find that there is a bug in your feature branch 2. So you create a new commit here, fix that bug, and now ideally you would like to have all of this migrated into the main line. But what's going to happen if you do this, if you merge this branch into here? Sorry? I don't know if you lose F2. I don't think Subversion actually has the concept of which branches have been applied, which is the merge tracking that I was talking about. What's definitely going to happen, or most likely going to happen, is that you'll end up with conflicts, and you need to resolve them by hand. Because what Subversion did was compute the difference between here and here during the merge. It doesn't know anything about this commit, which has also been applied. I realize I'm failing kind of to explain this right now. Doesn't make sense, but I'll just say, trust me, this is the case. If you merge, have a lot of branches and you merge in between them and then try to merge them all into the main line, you will get your conflicts and you will actually have painful times trying to resolve them. So let me get rid of that slide quickly before there are any more questions. So there's a little bit of an urban myth floating around, which says that specifically Git is so smart that it can do merges better than anything else in the entire universe, including humans. People don't actually seem to think about why Linus named Git Git. Which usually applies to stupid people. And Linus himself actually says Git is very stupid. It doesn't do anything but track content. So it doesn't really do very much merging or smart merging. Why then do these modern version control systems actually perform better than the previous version control systems when merging? They both have the same goal. You want to infuse the changes from one tree into another. They both rely actually on humans to merge conflicts, because humans are smarter than the computer and they know what they actually want in the tree. So if there's a conflict, both tools bail out and say, help me, I don't know what to do. But the modern version control systems actually use the history and keep track of the history when they're doing the merge. So with a simple example here, let's say you have two commits in an ancestry hierarchy, A and B, and you want to merge B into A. The way that modern version control systems do it is that they find the common ancestor of A and B, which is C, and compute only the patch from C, between C and B, and merge that into A. So if we return to that graph, what's going to happen is, if you ask this branch to be merged into the main line, what Git or any of the other tools are going to do is compute the common ancestor. And in this case, it is the dark blue oval. Because, well, it's in the ancestry of both trees. And so Git or the other tools are only going to identify this commit and only apply this commit to the main line. Nothing that has been already applied in the past, because anything before the common ancestor, well, is common ancestry. So both trees already have that information. Are there any questions up to this point? OK. Okay, then let me introduce the concept of feature branches. There isn't really that much to be said, but a couple of points that apply to feature branches. Ideally, in your project, you're going to have a feature branch for any feature that you're working on, because it allows you to do isolated development on the feature. To give a simple example, let's say you are currently working on a refactoring that you need in order to integrate a GUI into your tool. Now, while you're working on that, we all know that takes a little bit more than a day. At the end of that first day you started working on it, when everything doesn't work anymore because you're doing refactoring, right? You get a security bug submitted. And now you really want to actually fix that security bug, push out a new version so that your users aren't left out standing in the rain. The way to do that, if you were smart, is you branched to do your refactoring. You branched off the main line to do your refactoring, and now you can just simply check out your main line again, apply the security patch, publish a new version of your software based on that, and then return to your development branch and work again on your refactoring in the GUI. So for bug fixes, for features, for anything really, just branch. These branches allow you to use full VCS power. Obviously, you could just copy the entire tree and work on your GUI refactoring, but then you might not be able to use the version control system. And you will want to use that version control system because you want to have atomic commits that describe single changes, not one huge commit that says, made some changes, or refactoring, which happens quite a lot, unfortunately. Or the SVN commit dash M updated, or something like that. These feature branches, when you're using Git, you actually keep merging them into the main line, because you can't, at the end, when you want to produce your software, just say, let's just commit or merge everything that we have, every single branch, or set of branches into the main line and then build the software. Git is actually stupid. It doesn't do that. I have some links for you later if you're interested in this, if you want to read up on it, on what's actually going on and how you can work around it. And I also have a graph that's going to explain in a second what I mean with this. So maybe a better idea next time to put that graph first. But I hope you'll cope with me for just a second. Basically, what I'm trying to say is feature branches separate different features or bug fixes from your main line and allow you to work with full VCS support in separate development trees. So I would actually, at this point in time, before showing that graph, describe to you the workflow that I use for Debian packaging. And it's not only my workflow. Specifically, I want to thank Manoj Srivastava, who actually introduced me to the concept of feature branches, an eye-opening discovery for me. And Pierre Habuzet, who is a Git god, I'll say that, the Git god in Debian, he provided a lot of input and showed me how he does things, and that kind of influenced the way that I ended up doing things now. So there was a lot of back and forth here. Let's have a look. I use feature branches. Otherwise, I wouldn't have introduced them. And my main branch is the upstream branch. This is the software that I'm working with. Sometimes you will have changes to be made to the upstream branch, which you want upstream to include. Typos in a man page. Very simple example. I put all these into the upstream patches feature branch. They're waiting for upstream inclusion. Every single commit I make on that branch is a contained patch by itself. So let's say that feature branch, the upstream patches branch, has three commits on it. Well, that's three separate patches that are destined for upstream. So upstream can take only one of them, have the complete feature, and ignore the other two for now. They will be rebased. They're designed for cherry picking. I'll get to that also in just a second. I'm sorry that the flow, when you make these slides, you have a different flow in mind of the presentation. I hope you bear with me for now. I also have a second set of feature branches, and these are the deb/star feature branches. Anything that is Debian specific, for instance, in order to make it policy compliant or integrated with our network configuration and so on and so forth, anything will get a new feature branch in the dev/namespace. These are long-living branches, meaning that I actually continue working on them. I keep them around, but because Git is stupid, I do merge them into the master. Now, I hope I can get... I will actually advance now to the graph, because this is possibly getting a little bit confusing. And let me use the graph to explain some of the other branches that I use. So, as I've already said, there's the upstream branch. I hope this sort of way of using lines for displaying the workflow that's going on here is enough. I have the upstream branch. I have the master branch, which is the main branch, as we were talking about earlier, the trunk. The trunk for me is actually my Debianization branch. So that's where I work, because I'm the Debian maintainer. Thus, this is my master branch. And then there's also the build branch, which is what I use to integrate all these different features into one and then finally build the package. So let me walk through this. We have this upstream software here, and because we want to Debianize it, we branch from it. So we create the master branch, and then I decide that I need two features that are Debian specific. So I branch a new branch off master for the debfoo feature, and I branch another one for the debbar feature, and then because Git is stupid, I merge those back into my master line. So the Debian master line now has these features integrated, and I, as part of this commit, I also noted that I was integrating these things in the changelog so that it's kind of integrated. Ideally, the Debian changelog should be generated straight out of Git, and there's work, or any other version control system, and there's work in progress on this, but I'm not using it yet. And once I've integrated these two branches into my Debian mainline, then the build branch comes into play. And the build branch is basically a branch off the upstream where I merge all the patches that I want to be part of my package, which upstream hasn't yet included, but which I've made available in the upstream patches branch to upstream. So I merge that in so that I get them in the package. I merge my Debian branch, I tag the thing, and I build the package. This package happens to later become the package that is in Debian Edge or in Veni. So I branch again off the tag and create a long-living maintenance branch here. So if there's later on a security patch that needs to be applied and uploaded to security.debian.org, I can make the changes here on this branch only without affecting my development, which has moved on because of a new upstream version and so on and so forth. I don't actually need to make that branch immediately when I do the tag. First of all, I don't know whether the software is actually going to be the one in the stable release in Debian. And second, I can always branch later. It's not a problem. You can branch at any point in time in the history with most of these systems. So I published my software, and now upstream releases a new version. The first thing I do when I see the new version applied is I rebase the upstream patches. Now, rebasing is a term that comes from Git. The other tools call it differently. In GNU Arch, it was called replay. I don't know what it's called for Mercurial and BZR. But basically, what is happening with rebase, is that all the commits that are on here are kind of taken out. The tree is fast forwarded to the current state, and then these commits are applied again in the same order that they existed in this branch. Now, this branch is actually a temporary branch. It is optimized for cherry picking. What I mean with that is, if you recall that every single commit has a unique hash, and what you're doing here is you're taking commits on this branch and you're reapplying them to a different version of the tree. These commits will have different hashes. They will not be the same. So if somebody is tracking your upstream patches branch, you rebase and publish that, and the person does a pull and a merge of all the new commits. Git will think, well, these commits on the upstream patches branch are actually new. I don't know those hashes. So I'll try to apply them all, and you'll get conflicts, because the changes have already been applied. The content is already in might already be in the upstream branch, but you're actually telling, you're fooling the version control system in a way. So this is a temporary branch. It's designed only to exist for the upstream maintainer, who knows of the existence of the branch and who has very trivial tools to extract single patches from that. So in the case of MDADM, for instance, upstream also uses Git. And upstream can simply tell Git about this upstream patches branch, never merge that branch because that would screw up his repository, but rather go ahead and cherry pick. Say, I like this commit. I'll include this commit in the new upstream version. So let's assume there were three commits on the upstream patches branch. And upstream liked two of them, didn't like the third one. And he picked those two and he integrated them into the new version here. What Git and all the other tools do now when you rebase is actually say, hey, hold on, this commit already exists in upstream. So I will not migrate it to the new rebased upstream patches branch. So this rebased upstream patches branch only has one commit left, whereas this one had three. And this is actually a nice way for me to manage the list of upstream patches that are still waiting to go upstream, because it's a self-maintaining list in some ways. If upstream integrates a patch, then Git will simply remove that commit from the upstream patches. So let's return to that new upstream version. It was released here, and in order to be able to react to any changes that have been made in upstream, I actually merge this branch into my master branch, into my Debianization branch. And I also include a note in the changelog saying new upstream version colon as part of the same commit entry here. Now I find out that upstream has made a change in the new version which conflicts with my bar feature. So what I have to do is actually switch to the bar branch, make the necessary changes so that they don't conflict anymore, and I still have my branch. Possibly upstream just simply overwrote the effects of my branch here. I have to make sure that they're still existing so that the package is and continues to be policy compliant. So I make some changes here, and then I merge that branch back into master because Git is stupid. And then at one point in time, decide I need to release a new package. So I, again, pull in all the upstream patches that... Actually, I'm not sure I do that, because this is exactly the kind of problem that people would run into. I've already merged them. Yeah, but I did merge that commit into build already, and I merged it. I didn't cherry pick it. Now I don't feel very comfortable actually explaining the details of this. I did go through it once. I had a very good discussion actually with the Git developers on this, who were very patient to explain this all to me. So I'm not necessarily in the position to explain this, but there is a link later on where I did try to formulate it and had them proofread it, and it is actually correct. I think there might be a problem here. I'm not entirely sure, but let's stay on the conceptual level of what I'm trying to do. How I actually then use the tool to do it is another thing. That you had a question? If I do that, if I just simply remake the build branch, and this build branch basically gets renamed to main edge, if I want to do that at all, I guess that would be a possibility. I guess I have to investigate that. Yeah?
Just a question about the charity thing. So the service you're providing for upstream is pretty much, if you say that, one commit for the whole feature, they just get there. But let's say you're discussing a patch with upstream, and upstream is unhappy with your patch. So you have to touch it again and change it again to get the commit. And then you do that several times. So you have five commits for one feature, and the whole service is gone. Is there a way you prevent that?
So the question is, maybe upstream doesn't like the patch that I'm providing in upstream patches and wants me to make some changes and then publish a new patch. Yes, that happens very frequently, and it wouldn't, the development for this patch wouldn't happen up here in upstream patches. It would actually, like, let's say upstream likes my dead bar feature. I would be developing it in this branch. And once upstream is happy with the diff, then I could squash commit the entire branch into a single commit up here, which is independent from the branch. It's basically cherry-picked a couple of commits into a single one that I then make available to upstream patches. So that is possible. So I guess the rest of the graph doesn't really need more explanation. But thanks for the note about, or I should have to research this. If you're interested in this sort of topic, I also have a list, a link to a mailing list in just a second. Sign up, and I will bring up this topic on the mailing list and hope that some other people provide input, and there hopefully will be a conclusion at the end. So I don't know, do we have, about 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Do you want to see this in action? Should we do a little bit of a, damn it. Kind of a rhetorical question, but I know this is going to be impromptu. My temporary directory, my repository. Let's go. Okay. Huh? Oh, I trust that you judge me appropriately. This is upstream. This is actually a quick bit of maintenance here. Give me a second. All right. So this, I have one branch. This is upstream. And should even work. There we go. So I wish I could look at the graph so that I knew exactly what I was doing there. Let's follow up with Pask's example. I don't want it to say hello world. I wanted to say hello LCA people for Debian. So this is my little impromptu change. I make a Debian directory, and this Debian directory will get a change log, which is not in a Debian format at all. So I branch the upstream branch into my master branch. Oh, damn it. And I add the Debian change log to my master branch. All right, let me quickly bring up this wonderful git k tool. Which tries to visualize what I'm doing with horrible fonts. I hope you excuse that. But you basically see I have upstream, and I branched off that into the master. As soon as there will be more commits, you'll understand more what the graph is trying to say. So I have now packaged, I changed this thing for Debian. I've Debianized it by adding a change log. Now, what I want to do now is publish 1.0-1. And I do that by branching the build branch of upstream. So now I'm in the build branch, and there is, I'm sorry, and there is only hello.sh and no Debian directory, because this is the upstream branch, basically. So now I merge the master branch. And it adds the change log. And now I build the package, and I test the package, and then I say, this is cool, this works. I am tagging it as Debian 1.0-1. Now, if I go to git k, you you can see that build and master branch are actually both at the same commit right now because there hasn't been much happening that wasn't on the other branch, right? You can also see the tag, 1.0-1. So now, I want to add a Debian-specific feature branch. And the Debian-specific feature branch is specifically for you LCA people. So it's called LCA, and it's off my master branch. And what I do in this is say, hello, LCA people. And then I love it. Never get to do this otherwise. And create a commit. Now, let's have a quick look what this did. I find git k to be incredibly valuable. Doing commands, finding out whether the graph actually represents what you have in your head, and if not, then resetting your tree to an earlier state, it's wonderful. But I think this one pretty much still represents what I'm trying to do. Now, I want to be publishing 1.0-2, the new Debian release. So what I'll do is, because Git is stupid, I'll merge LCA into the master branch, and then merge the master branch into the build branch. So I return to my master branch, which still thinks that we're creating the world and not only LCA. And now I merge the LCA branch. Actually, just to make it the way I have it, you can use slash or pretty much anything. There are certain naming conventions, but doing it like this kind of creates a namespace. And I like that specifically with regards to a later slide that I'll show you, which talks about working together with other distributions. So now I'm in the master branch. This is the little asterisk up here. And I want to merge my LCA branch into master. So hello changed. And ideally, I document that. And then I haven't really found a good way to do this yet. And I think this is specifically what a higher level tool is supposed to do. Now what I'll do is I will actually amend the last commit, which still has the meaningful commit message from the last commit. But now you can see that it not only modified hello.sh, but also Debian changelog. So now I have a new commit object. And if I look into where did my feature branch go? No, the commit actually worked. What the mistake is that I didn't tell git k that I actually wanted to see all branches. So it only shows you the branches that are in the ancestry. And deb LCA, didn't I just merge you? I did, right? No, I didn't yet. No, I did. No, I did merge it, but then I amended. Yeah, that's what happened. Then I amended the commit, which overwrote the pointers to the parent and children. Kind of stupid. Nothing we can't fix. We're in the master branch. We want to. Okay. Get rid of this. I shouldn't be worrying about spelling errors in this one. Did I just put that onto the master branch? I really like Git. To be honest, it basically forgives you everything. git reset minus minus hard. Don't do it if you don't know what you're doing. It will actually delete your or change your work tree. It doesn't delete the data. If you know the commit hash, you can still retrieve it. There's also git fsck to find unreferenced objects that you can get the data back. It is a file system in some ways. So now, fine, that'll do. Let's quickly make sure we're still where we are. Yep. Okay, I will just simply forget about the Debian changelog update for now, or I'll make a separate commit. So check out the master branch again, my Debianization branch, and merge the deplca branch. That worked. Now update the changelog in a separate commit. And for consistency. Okay, and now, theoretically, I should have something that is more of a merge, something that like kind of goes out and then comes back in. This is not happening here because Git decided in my impromptu demonstration that it was going to fast forward. This means that it can actually change your master tip without merging because nothing has changed on master. If you don't mind, I'll just continue down the road because I also don't have much time left. But theoretically, you could imagine that deplca was going off now and coming back into master. So once I merged that, what I want to do now is return to my build branch and merge the new master branch into it. And then create a new package and tag it. So now the graph has become a new tag. There's a new tag, and it basically corresponds to the new release. Now, I didn't. Does this end at 20 past? A half past, all right. Let me quickly go to upstream changes then, upstream patches, and try that. Are there any questions so far? Are you guys, just quickly, are you guys thoroughly annoyed that I'm screwing this up all the time? All right. Git definitely does. BZR does. I'm sure Mercurial does as well. There are two ways to do it. Basically, I think what you're talking about is the situation where you made some changes in one branch. You're not yet ready to commit those changes because you have no idea anymore what's going on. You want to switch to another branch and kind of see what you've been doing there and then return. So you have a dirty work tree which you haven't committed yet, and you want to return to somewhere else. Well, there are two ways of doing it. One is git stash. So let's make some changes here. And let's say I'm not quite ready to commit this yet. If I want to, which branch am I on? Build. Damn it. Let's say I want to return to master. How do I produce this? It has to be conflicting. It has to conflict. Okay. So let's make an incompatible. No, this is going to be a compatible change. My goodness. Incompatible. You will be an incompatible change. So if I check out my build branch now. Damn it! Can we just pretend that I can't check out the other branch? Maybe Git isn't stupid after all. At least not as stupid as I always thought. But basically, yeah, it computes. It isn't that stupid about these sort of things. But it has the situation will come when it says, "I'm sorry, I can't check out. You're in the middle of something. Please do something about it." And in order to answer your question now, there are two ways of doing it. You can say git stash. That stores your working tree into a stash and cleans it up. So now you have no changes. If you compare that to what's on the very top, it's a different output, right? Now, you can actually look at these stashes, and you can apply them again. So git stash apply, and you're back to that point in time. So if you know Quilt, that's pretty much what stash kind of does. You keep stashing stuff on top, and it is that. It is a stack. So you can't, it's not very easy to pull out earlier stashes and apply them and then leave later ones. Also, I think the stashes actually stay around. You have to delete them again. I'm personally not using it. I'm using a different approach, which is simply, look, branching is really cheap. So I just create a temporary branch. I commit the change. And I go back to my master, or build branch, or whatever it was. And now I just simply have a temporary branch dangling off. And I can later merge that, or fast forward it, rebase it, cherry pick from it, delete it. So there are definitely ways. The branching is wonderful. Like, if you see this command and how quick it creates a new branch, if you compare that to Subversion, it's a little faster. So does that answer your question? All right. Are there any other questions? Nope. Then let's do the upstream thing. So I think upstream should... I realize I'm completely screwing this up now. Upstream should be doing what Hello World is actually designed to do with an exclamation mark. I don't really want to be committing this onto upstream, because I want to be committing it onto upstream patches. And I don't have the time to show off how cool Git is that I can actually then later on move commits between branches. So let me first check out the upstream patches branch, or create it, and then commit on here. Now upstream makes a couple of changes. And releases a new version. Now, upstream has actually not integrated my change. So you see here that upstream patches is still branched off at an earlier point in time. All these other changes that have led to upstream 1.1 are not in, they're not in the same tree. They're actually branched still. So what I do now is, because I actually want to keep upstream patches around, and I want to keep upstream patches so that it will apply to the later upstream code, so that I, as the person who wants the patch in the upstream repository, have to worry about all the conflicts and not upstream, because that might lower his incentive to do it. I now rebase my upstream patches onto the tip of upstream. Of course. And that's because I did a lot of bad things here and messed up the content. But what we're trying to get is basically all the additional empty lines that upstream added with my version. And that's the new one here. And then we add that and we say, yeah. Okay. I don't know if that's actually... Okay, and then continue. And what happened now is that my upstream patches now live on top of upstream again. It's a different commit. So now if upstream this is the commit. If now upstream decides that, yes, this is actually a worthy change, and Terry picks it, you'll see a duplication of the commits here. And later, when upstream then releases a new version, I'll just skip that for now, I return to my upstream patches branch, and I rebase it on top of upstream. And it has nothing to do, because basically there is nothing to do. The one single commit that was on there has already been integrated. My branch continues to live, but, well, the commit that was on my branch, which wasn't in upstream yet, the separate commit, has simply been dropped, because it is integrated with upstream.